Have you ever wondered why some countries dominate the world stage for decades or centuries, only to eventually decline while others rise? Ray Dalio's Principles for Dealing with the Changing World Order offers a fascinating exploration of this question, drawing on 500 years of history to reveal the patterns behind these shifts. As the founder of Bridgewater Associates, the world's largest hedge fund, Dalio brings both practical experience and scholarly depth to this analysis. The book has become required reading among global business leaders and policymakers, with Bill Gates calling it a provocative read that offers a new lens for understanding the world. Even more telling, when Dalio presented these ideas at an economic forum in 2019, attendees included the heads of central banks from six continents, a testament to the weight his perspective carries in corridors of power worldwide. The world order is shifting in ways that have happened many times before, but never in our lifetimes. Through studying the rises and declines of major empires over 500 years, Dalio has discovered that the most significant influence on people's lives is the struggle to make, take, and distribute wealth and power. These struggles unfold in predictable cycles, with a small percentage of the population eventually controlling exceptionally large percentages of wealth and power, becoming overextended, then encountering bad times that lead to conflicts, revolutions, and eventually a new world order. While evolution drives humanity's upward trajectory of improvement through learning and adaptation, cycles swing back and forth around this upward trend like a corkscrew pointing skyward. Looking at charts of GDP per person and life expectancy over 500 years reveals pronounced upward movement, particularly accelerating after the 19th century due to innovations like the printing press, which contributed to the Renaissance, scientific revolution, and industrial revolution. These advances shifted wealth from agriculture-based economies controlled by monarchs to industry-based economies where inventive capitalists worked with governments. However, these evolutionary improvements don't cause the abrupt shifts in wealth and power we see throughout history. The dramatic changes come from booms, busts, revolutions, and wars, cycles driven by logical, cause-effect relationships. The formula for success has consistently been well-educated people creating innovations funded through capital markets. But capitalism inevitably creates wealth gaps and over-indebtedness, leading to economic downturns and conflicts. Countries with large savings, low debts, and strong reserve currencies weather these storms better than others. What makes these patterns so reliable? Dalio has identified eight key determinants of wealth and power: education, competitiveness, innovation/technology, economic output, share of world trade, military strength, financial center strength, and reserve currency status. These factors rise and fall together in a predictable sequence. Rising education leads to innovation in technology, which increases trade share and military strength, improving economic output, building financial centers, and eventually establishing reserve currency status. The big cycle of empires unfolds in three distinct phases: rise, top, and decline. During the rise, after a new order forms, countries exhibit low debt, small wealth gaps, effective cooperation, good education and infrastructure, capable leadership, and peaceful world order. This creates a virtuous cycle where strengths in one area contribute to strengths in others. At the top, success plants the seeds of decline. As citizens earn more, they become less competitive compared to those in countries willing to work for less. Other nations copy the leading powers' methods and technologies. Prosperity breeds complacency. People work less hard, pursue leisure, and become decadent. Values shift from the battle-hardened generation that built wealth to their more privileged descendants. People bet on continued prosperity and borrow excessively, creating financial bubbles. Wealth gaps grow as the rich use resources to expand their power and influence politics, creating divisions between haves and have-nots. Having a reserve currency enables excessive borrowing, which appears to strengthen the empire short-term while weakening it long-term. Maintaining the empire becomes unprofitable as costs exceed revenues, and the rich country paradoxically begins borrowing from poorer, higher-saving countries, an early sign of shifting wealth and power. The decline typically comes gradually, then suddenly, from internal economic weakness, internal fighting, costly external conflicts, or combinations thereof. When debts become unsustainable during economic downturns, countries almost always choose printing money over defaulting, devaluing currency, and raising inflation. Internal conflicts intensify between rich and poor and between different ethnic, religious, and racial groups. Political extremism emerges as populism of both left and right, the anti-capitalist phase when elites are blamed for problems. Externally, rising great powers challenge existing powers, especially during times of internal weakness. Military spending becomes burdensome as economic conditions deteriorate. Without peaceful means to resolve international disputes, conflicts are resolved through tests of power. The end of an empire's big cycle comes when faith in its reserve currency and debt collapses. Understanding money and credit is essential to grasping how wealth and power rise and decline. All entities, individuals, companies, organizations, and governments operate under the same financial realities of income, expenses, assets, and liabilities. When entities spend more than they earn, they deplete savings or borrow. If an entity's assets greatly exceed liabilities, it can temporarily spend above income by selling assets. But when income falls below expenses plus debt payments, it must cut spending or default. The long-term debt cycle plays out over 50 to 75 years and typically surprises people when it reaches crisis points. These cycles end when central banks can no longer stimulate real economic growth through money and credit creation, causing debt holders to seek other storeholds of wealth. The cycle unfolds in six stages. First, it begins with little debt and hard money, like gold or silver. Second, claims on hard money, paper notes, emerge for convenience. Third, credit expands as banks lend more than their hard money reserves, creating economic booms but eventually unsustainable debt levels. Fourth, debt crises occur, forcing central banks to print money and break links to hard money. Fifth, fiat money systems emerge, eventually leading to currency debasement. History shows we shouldn't rely on governments for financial protection. They're typically the biggest borrowers, and when crises hit, they print money and devalue currency rather than default. Leaders often accumulate debts that won't come due until after their terms end, leaving successors to manage the consequences. Of roughly 700 currencies that have existed since 1700, only about 20% remain, and all have been devalued. Looking back to 1850, the world's major currencies were completely different than today's. While the dollar, pound, and Swiss franc existed, most important currencies of that era have died, either wiped out through hyperinflation and war debts, merged into new currencies, or severely devalued. How people interact with each other fundamentally drives the outcomes they experience in societies. Within countries, governing systems establish behavioral expectations and rules, producing far-reaching consequences that shape everything from economic opportunities to social mobility. The most significant factor affecting people across time and geography is how they struggle to make, take, and distribute wealth and power, alongside deep-seated ideological and religious conflicts that often span generations. Internal orders typically progress through six distinct stages, comparable to the progression of a disease with identifiable symptoms and predictable patterns. The cycle begins with stage one, when new leadership consolidates power after conflict, often through a combination of force and popular support. This is followed by stage two, when resource allocation systems and government bureaucracies are established, including legal frameworks, taxation systems, and property rights. This foundation leads to stage three's peace and prosperity, characterized by economic growth, technological advancement, and rising living standards. However, this success eventually produces stage four's excesses in spending, debt accumulation, and widening wealth gaps between social classes. These excesses create stage 5's deteriorating financial conditions and intense social conflict, with mounting tensions between different socioeconomic groups. This can potentially culminate in stage 6's civil wars or revolutions, which then restart the cycle through violent restructuring. Civil wars are inevitable historical events that most people dismiss as impossibilities, especially after extended peaceful periods. This complacency is particularly dangerous because revolutionary changes inevitably involve radical restructuring of wealth distribution, political power systems, debt obligations, and financial ownership patterns. These conflicts occur because existing systems typically benefit certain classes at the expense of others, eventually becoming intolerable when wealth gaps widen beyond sustainable levels and economic conditions deteriorate for the majority. The brutality of civil wars typically escalates far beyond what participants would have considered possible beforehand, often shocking even the most prepared observers. Elites and moderates generally flee to safer locations, face imprisonment, or suffer execution as extremist factions gain control. While most civil wars shift power from right to left, with the poor majority overthrowing the wealthy minority, some conflicts shift power rightward when existing orders become dysfunctional and populations desperately seek restoration of discipline and productivity, often through authoritarian leadership. During civil wars, governments invariably face acute money shortages and financial crises, leading to desperate measures such as wealth confiscation, strict capital controls, and severe asset restrictions. Foreign enemies frequently exploit these internal vulnerabilities by providing support to opposing factions or launching direct interventions, which explains why internal and external wars often coincide. Despite their inherent brutality and destruction, civil wars can ultimately lead to beneficial societal restructurings if the aftermath is handled with wisdom and foresight, allowing for the establishment of more equitable and sustainable systems. International relations operate on raw power dynamics rather than established governance systems. Unlike internal orders with clear laws and enforcement, external relations follow the law of the jungle, where powerful countries determine outcomes. The 5 major types of conflicts between nations are trade/economic wars, technology wars, geopolitical wars, capital wars, and military wars. These power struggles typically escalate in sequence, with all dimensions becoming weaponized once military conflict begins. Domestic and military strength are inextricably linked. It takes money for both guns, military power, and butter, social spending. Financial strength to outspend rivals is crucial, as demonstrated by America's Cold War victory. The greatest risk of military conflict emerges when opposing powers have comparable military capabilities and irreconcilable differences. When faced with fighting or backing down, both options carry heavy costs. Power cycles between cooperative relationships during good times and conflict during bad times, with rising powers challenging the status quo that declining powers wish to maintain. The wise use of power recognizes that generosity and trust can be more effective than brute force. World War II provides the most recent example of the transition from peace to war, demonstrating how the confluence of money-credit cycles, internal disorder, and external conflict created conditions for catastrophic war and established a new world order. The Great Depression led countries to turn toward populist, autocratic, nationalistic, and militaristic leaders. Germany and Japan, hit particularly hard economically, embraced fascism. Economic warfare preceded military conflict, with tactics including asset freezes, blocking capital market access, and trade embargoes. During wartime, governments implement comprehensive economic controls, shifting resources from profit-making to war-making. These classic policies include controlling production, rationing goods, regulating imports and exports, fixing prices and wages, restricting access to financial assets, and limiting capital movement. Protecting wealth during wartime proves nearly impossible as normal economic activities cease, traditionally safe investments become unsafe, capital mobility is restricted, and high taxes are imposed to redistribute wealth to war efforts. Looking at the Dutch, British, American, and Chinese empires reveals how the big cycle has played out in practice. After breaking free from Habsburg Spain in 1581, the Dutch built an empire that became the world's richest by 1625, despite their small population. They invented modern capitalism, creating the world's first publicly listed company, Dutch East India Company, and first stock exchange in 1602. These innovations arose from necessity, spreading risk for dangerous global voyages, and revolutionized finance. In 1609, the Bank of Amsterdam established a stable banking system that positioned the guilder as the world's first true reserve currency. The Dutch Golden Age eventually gave way to decline as the Dutch shifted focus to living the good life, weakening their finances while other powers rose. The Industrial Revolution centered in Britain transformed economies, and the Dutch, once unparalleled leaders in innovation and wealth, failed to keep up. Around 1750, Britain and France surpassed Dutch power as the Netherlands became more indebted, experienced internal fighting over wealth, and weakened militarily. Despite the guilder remaining a global reserve currency, wealthy Dutch investors began moving capital to higher-yielding British investments. Britain's rise began around 1600 against the backdrop of massive European conflicts. The Thirty Years' War created a new European order through the Peace of Westphalia, while Britain experienced its own turmoil through the English Civil War and Glorious Revolution. These conflicts weakened the monarchy and strengthened Parliament, establishing rule of law over royal authority and creating a more meritocratic selection of national leaders. Britain's well-educated population, culture of inventiveness, and available capital created a wave of competitiveness and prosperity. England's natural endowments of iron and coal boosted the First Industrial Revolution, transforming Europe from a rural agrarian society to an urban industrial one. By 1850, Britain controlled about 40% of global exports, with around 60% of global trade denominated in pounds from 1850 to 1914. Despite running a persistent trade deficit after 1870, Britain maintained current account surpluses through returns on overseas investments. Yet even as the empire continued expanding, the classic seeds of decline were emerging. Declining competitiveness, rising inequality, and the rise of new rivals. The United States followed the classic post-revolutionary pattern of nation-building. Strong leaders gained control, consolidated power, developed a vision, worked through factional conflicts, established governance systems, and built functioning institutions. Unlike many nations, the U.S. accomplished this relatively peacefully through negotiation and well-designed governance structures. After the Civil War came the Second Industrial Revolution, when free market capitalism produced tremendous wealth alongside significant inequality. After World War II, the U.S. emerged as the dominant global power. The Truman Doctrine of 1947 formally established America's stance against communism, framing the conflict as between free democratic institutions and oppressive minority rule. The Bretton Woods Agreement of 1944 established a system linking the dollar to gold and other currencies to the dollar, while the Soviet system centered on the unwanted ruble. The dollar naturally became the world's leading reserve currency, as the U.S. had accumulated about two-thirds of all government-held gold by war's end. By the 1960s, America's prosperity led to fiscal imprudence. The costs of the space program, war on poverty, and Vietnam War mounted as Americans embraced an unsustainable guns-and-butter policy. The system collapsed in August 1971 when the Nixon administration defaulted on commitments to pay in gold, offering paper money instead. This removed constraints on money and credit growth, ushering in a decade of stagflation. The United States is roughly 70% through its big cycle, plus or minus 10%. While it hasn't yet crossed into the sixth phase of Civil War revolution with active fighting, internal conflict is high and rising. The country is split almost 50-50 along seemingly irreconcilable lines. Unlike 50 years ago when most party members were moderates, today there's a greater concentration of people at the extremes. Meanwhile, China's recent 200-year cycle featured a long decline followed by a rapid rise. From its lowest point in 1940-50, China improved gradually until Deng Xiaoping's reforms around 1980 triggered dramatic economic growth. Today, China is roughly tied with the U.S. in trade, economic output, and innovation technology, while rapidly advancing in military power and education. It remains emerging in finance and lags as a reserve currency power. The U.S. and China have been positioned by destiny and big cycle forces into their current roles as global powers. America's post-WW2 economic dominance led to the dollar becoming the world's reserve currency, creating both privilege and vulnerability. This status allowed the U.S. to engage in excessive borrowing, resulting in a precarious position where it owes other countries, particularly China, substantial debt that it's increasingly monetizing while paying negative real interest rates. Meanwhile, China, recovering from its classic financial collapse during America's ascent, implemented revolutionary economic and social changes under Deng Xiaoping's leadership that produced unprecedented advances and wealth accumulation, though now faces concerning wealth gaps between coastal and inland regions, urban and rural populations. The U.S.-China trade war, while significant, remains relatively contained compared to historical precedents. It features classic economic weapons like tariffs, import restrictions, and market access barriers, similar to past trade conflicts. However, the technology war represents a far more serious and potentially decisive conflict. The competition spans artificial intelligence, quantum computing, semiconductor manufacturing, and 5G networks, as the victor will likely dominate both military capabilities and economic development for decades to come. While the U.S. currently maintains an overall technology lead, particularly in semiconductor design and software, China is advancing rapidly in areas like artificial intelligence and quantum computing. The U.S. technology sector's market capitalization, approximately 4 times China's, understates China's actual technological strength by excluding major private companies like Huawei and numerous state-backed enterprises. Sovereignty issues represent China's most critical strategic concerns, particularly regarding mainland China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and the South and East China Seas. The historical trauma of the century of humiliation, 1839 to 1949, deeply drives China's determination to maintain complete sovereignty within its borders and reclaim territories it considers historically Chinese. This includes Hong Kong's integration, control over Xinjiang and Tibet, and, most critically, Taiwan's status. The Taiwan situation presents the most dangerous flashpoint in U.S.-China relations. Many Chinese strategists believe the U.S. will never allow peaceful reunification, while American policy remains deliberately ambiguous about its response to potential conflict. Cultural differences between Americans and Chinese fundamentally shape how they approach conflicts and negotiations. Chinese culture traditionally favors top-down decision-making, emphasizing collective interests over individual ones, maintaining hierarchical respect, and focusing on broadly distributed opportunities across society. This contrasts sharply with American culture, which demands bottom-up governance, champions personal freedom and individualism, encourages revolutionary thinking, and bases respect on quality of thinking rather than position or seniority. While these differences might not be immediately apparent in routine business or diplomatic interactions, they become defining factors during serious conflicts or strategic negotiations. The Chinese emphasis on long-term planning and historical patterns often clashes with the American focus on immediate results and innovation, creating fundamental misunderstandings in how each side interprets the other's actions and intentions. Based on the five key indicators examined, humanity's inventiveness will likely produce great advances while simultaneously battling significant challenges from the debt/economic cycle, internal order cycle, external order cycle, and worsening natural disasters. This creates a fundamental tension between human innovation and mounting problems. Technological breakthroughs in artificial intelligence, renewable energy, and biotechnology offer unprecedented opportunities, yet they emerge against a backdrop of increasing systemic risks and environmental pressures. Looking beyond the comprehensive data analysis, three key forces will shape the next decade: the short-term debt-money economy cycle, business cycle, the internal political cycle, and the escalating conflicts between the U.S. and China. Given the unprecedented stimulation, limited economic slack, especially in the U.S., moderate to strong bubble indicators, and high interest rate sensitivity in markets, the next economic downturn will likely come sooner than the typical 8-year pattern. The combination of record-high debt levels, rising inflation pressures, and geopolitical tensions creates a particularly volatile environment. Historical patterns suggest that when these factors converge, market corrections tend to be more severe and recovery periods longer. Despite extensive analysis, the unknown vastly outweighs the known when predicting the future. Dalio shares his core principles for navigating uncertainty. First, identify all possibilities and eliminate intolerable worst-case scenarios through careful risk management and strategic planning. Second, diversify extensively across asset classes, geographies, and currencies to create robust portfolios that can weather various economic conditions. Third, prioritize deferred gratification over immediate rewards to secure a better future, building reserves during prosperous times to maintain flexibility during downturns. Fourth, triangulate thinking by consulting with the smartest available minds to stress test ideas and continuously learn, creating networks of expertise that can provide different perspectives on complex challenges. The most important lesson from studying 500 years of history is that nothing is permanent except evolution itself, which contains cycles that are difficult to fight against. Successful navigation requires understanding which stage of the cycle one is in and applying timeless principles accordingly. For example, during debt deleveraging phases, maintaining liquid assets and reducing exposure to credit-sensitive investments becomes crucial. No single economic or political system is universally best. The optimal approach depends on circumstances, which are constantly changing. The ultimate test of any system is how well it delivers what most people want, which can be objectively measured through metrics like GDP per capita, education levels, healthcare outcomes, and social mobility. History's clearest lesson is that skilled collaboration producing win-win relationships that both grow and distribute wealth effectively creates much better outcomes than fighting civil wars over wealth and power that lead to subjugation. This is evidenced by the success of nations that have maintained stable institutions, protected property rights, and fostered inclusive economic growth while managing social tensions through effective policymaking and wealth distribution mechanisms.